Hello and welcome to episode 78 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
We've got no cookie this week, but that's okay because we've kidnapped Ono Video Games' Martin Felder.
Hello. Pleasure to be here as always.
As ever, you can find the show notes for this episode at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk where you can comment, and don't forget you can also tweet us via Nerds Podcast or find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Anyway, we are still running a very short listener survey for, you know, getting some feedback because we're slowly approaching episode 100 and all those kinds of things. And when I say it's short, I really do mean it's short. It's so short, it's like, it's not quite the number one of surveys, but I think it's getting there.
And when you said approaching episode 100, you mean we're still 22 off?
Yeah, slowly but surely.
22 weeks away.
Yeah, slowly
but surely. We're creeping up.
Slowly but surely. Anyway, we've got some news, dude, haven't we?
Yep, we have. We've got the Phage dude, Jack Thorne, working on the script for the Sandman film. The new Tony Hawk's game will be a mobile exclusive. Talks are happening about a Dread sequel, according to Carl Urban. And we talk about the end of the Nintendo Wi-Fi service. Then after that, our feature is plot devices that don't quite work when you think about them.
But first up, Sandman film.
Yay.
Yes. David Goyer did the treatment, which of course makes many people slowly, it's sort of filled with a bit of trepidation. Other people slightly more excited, but more trepidation, I think, than excited. But it's fine. It's fine because apparently Jack Thorne is working on the script, and he's the dude that created the lovely Fades TV series on BBC Three.
Bring back the Fades.
Yeah, that fantastic TV series that won BAFTAs, and then the new controller ahead of BBC Three just went and cancelled when they got the job?
I think the fat-headed controller. Let's cancel everything that's good. Hey, let's do lots of shite things. Hey, more repeats of Doctor Who. There we go.
Apparently, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is still attached at a producer at the moment, and there's the hint that maybe he could end up directing and starring. Whether or not he would be in the role of Sandman is another matter. But
it'd kind of work because he is quite you know, a gaunt fellow, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got the look. Yeah, that's what I want to say.
I don't know. He seems too jolly. He's such a jolly fellow, you know.
He can do somber.
I suppose the only thing I can think of where he's done somber is like Mysterious Skin, which is like not quite somber. I don't know.
That's depressing in whole other different ways.
Yeah, no, totally. Like that's not. Yeah, that's a very different thing to what we're talking about.
My spirits need lifting. I'll put that film on. Bad
actor. I could definitely do serious, but yes, somber. What have I seen him in where he's been somber?
Well, he wasn't exactly dancing and singing in Batman.
This is true.
50-50 was...
Oh, yeah, no, he's pretty somber in 50-50, yeah. Yeah, he actually does quite well in that film, so...
Obviously... He's actually pretty surprised me since, you know, seeing him in things like Inception.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, he's, you know, I'm still thinking he's the young'un from, you know, Third Rock from the Sun. Yeah. That's still stuck in my head. And every now and again, he'll pop up in something and he'll go, what are you doing getting older? That's weird.
That's the thing. He's a really talented actor. I don't, you know, I would never, you know, question that at all. He's great. It's just, you know, it's a, seems like a slightly different role for him. But that's fine. I can take it.
500 Days of Summer, well, half of it was quite somber.
Yeah, that too. Oh, I was just thinking, though, if Jack Thorne's script makes it all the way through to actual production, that's another Brit who's managed to invade Hollywood.
Well, I'm ever hopeful, because after all, Neil Gaiman is getting, you know, more and more recognition in Hollywood and, you know, TV and, you know, things like that. So, you know, his caliber is rising. I've been a fan of his stuff since he was doing Books of Magic and, you know, Sandman, stuff like that. So it's nice. Oh, and I've got the original comics somewhere, first prints of, oh God, bollocks. What's that film where it's the shooting star that falls?
Oh,
Starman.
No. Superman.
No.
There's a star and it crashes to Earth and then there's like a baby and he's Superman.
Yeah, that's not...
It's Superman.
The thing that keeps getting repeated, I think film 4 have got the rights for Shogun on telly over here at the moment.
Yeah, well, I only recently saw it. It was on yesterday, I think, actually. And I've seen it before, but it's like, yay, I like that this film was made. It's a very Neil Gaiman sort of, you know, fairy tale
Stardust.
Kind of thing.
Stardust,
thank
yes.
you, yes. My brain was saying Starburst. And it's like, shut up, brain, shut up.
It's not a chewy sweet, no.
It's not. Or an old sci-fi magazine.
Are you hungry, dude? Like, is that what's happening here?
No, actually, I was far geekier than that. I was thinking of the magazine.
Oh, yes.
I used to read that.
Yeah, the sci-fi. They're still going. So.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've paid so little attention to magazines over the last few years. It's
I think
up in the internet.
I think they've shifted a lot of stuff online, though. But yeah,
yeah,
they're still
many
about
in the shops. Really.
No,
that makes sense.
I think it's more you order through the website and stuff. But,
it's actually changed its name to Opal Fruits in a weird twist of fate.
Make my mouth water.
I think Jack Thorne has done previously like episodes of Doctor Who.
What was it? We saw him at the Cornwall Film Festival years back, didn't we?
Yeah.
What was that in relation to that time?
I think...
Spanish films?
No.
No.
Was he talking... Was it pre him working on Fates? Like,
yes,
it
I
took,
believe
so. So, but that was the pre-Fates. 2008 Cornwall Film Festival. He'd just been pretty much commissioned for Fades then.
Oh, that's like...
So it took
about,
how many...
6 years ago.
So it took how many years?
Yeah, it's quite a gestation.
Because Fate was, what, 2012, 13?
No, I think it was more like 10 or 11.
I don't think it was that long ago.
I think it was quite a while ago.
So it took, what, 3... And that's without at least 3 years for it to see actual sort of broadcast. Mm. That's scary. Going back to... the Simon film, Neil Gaiman is meant to be on as executive producer still at the moment, and as long as they don't fudge things up and everyone stays happy, hopefully his influence will oversee.
Yeah, I remember the backlash from the Doctor Who episode that he wrote, and yeah, kind of the fans going, hey, but he didn't have, like, you know, exclusive control and stuff, and they changed loads of stuff, and oh yeah, this is crap.
Which episode did he do?
It was the one where they get trapped in that weird kind of universe and the TARDIS comes alive as that woman.
Oh, that.
Yeah,
yeah.
That guy in the episode.
Was it no, it's not the Doctor's wife.
I thought it was all right. I had some issues with it, but...
If I remember correctly, there was a lot of talk after that episode, because it was around the time of the controversy about them changing up the... the producers and that.
Yeah.
And
there was no problem and...
Yeah, and spending issues, and basically I think Gaiman's script originally was a lot more...
Elaborate?
Yes, a lot more elaborate visually and everything else. And basically due to budgeting issues, his original concept was not filmed. So, yes. Joy... Oh, joy.
In general, though, I liked plenty about that episode, but it's like, yeah, some things about it.
I mean, I believe, from what I remember at the time, I think Neil Gaiman did say that he did like the episode. It wasn't quite to his original vision, but he did like it. It did turn out quite well.
Yeah, I remember he was wandering around on set on the... because they were still doing the Confidentials at that time, weren't they?
Aren't they still?
No, they cancelled it.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, the Doctor Who Confidentials no longer exist as a cost-cutting measure.
Wow, that sucks.
which I thought was silly because they seemed an obvious way to fill TV time and an obvious way to pack extras onto DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah,
silly sausages. Yeah, I would love to see a Sandman film because I think Neil Gaiman needs more stuff on film and not more stuff on TV.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, I'm going to move us on to the next story about the revelations about the new Tony Hawk game.
I'll bed in here.
Yeah, Retroid has already expressed his... not distaste, displeasure, but lack of...
severe apathy.
Yeah, towards the Tony Hawk's franchise in various social media circles over the past couple of weeks. However, the revelation... I was so excited, as was Paul beside me, when it was revealed that there was going to be a new Tony Hawk's game, because we'd loved the Tony Hawk's games, except for the ones with the motion board things.
Well, no, to be honest, I think the last really good one was probably Tony Hawk's... Thug 2, basically.
Yeah, Tony Hawk's Underground 2.
Mm. Yeah. American Wasteland was okay.
I just didn't like the fact you couldn't have a custom character for the main story.
I didn't like after that they went for stuff like Project Date and whatnot, and they had you doing stuff with the analog sticks in order to do stuff, tricks with the board. And yeah, that just got a bit complicated and technical, and
Was that pre or post Skate?
I think that was around the same time.
Yeah,
because that's the thing. I mean, the Tony Hawk's games were always. This is why I think my reaction to it is, I'm not excited about a new Tony Hawk game, but I could see this being a thing that could be okay, because basically the old Tony Hawk's games, they were great, but they were very, very simple in a lot of ways. It was skate towards a thing. And then press a button or a couple of buttons to do a trick. It was, sometimes like a button combination or a combo or whatever.
Yeah.
They were never particularly complicated games. And that worked fine because they weren't on, particularly complicated systems. You didn't expect like a huge amount from them. And also you could sort of drop in and play it for 10 minutes at a time and drop out. I mean, you could play it for hours if you wanted. And I kind of did as well. But like, I don't think you necessarily needed to do that. Whereas I think if you made that exact same thing on like a PlayStation 4 or like an Xbox today, it would feel like I don't think you need that.
Yeah, and I know exactly what you mean with, the kind of games that were coming out for, PS2, PS1, PS2 era can't really be full retail games anymore. I mean, I've got a fair few PS2 and GameCube games where I look at them now and I'm thinking... this was a full retail release, like 3D pinball and, things like that. And it's, I like it, but there's no way I would pay 40 quid for it. So, yeah, stuff like Tony Hawk's, almost said Tony Hawk's, that's a comedian. it makes sense. It's either going to be something like Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation Network game or, mobile. So I can see why. Going mobile.
I kind of disagree with that to a certain extent. I mean, why does it have to be, just a marketplace? I mean, is it like the amount of information?
Especially for like a big studio, if this was something coming out of a like an indie studio, it would be a little bit different. I could always give them more sway for putting full price on things or whatever. But like for a gigantic studio, I just think there's not going to be enough content, enough dedicated playtime, enough mechanics, enough to keep you hooked, basically.
I completely disagree with that. I mean, nowadays we're actually, saying when a game is too short that it's like, 40 hours or something like that. Oh, it's too short of a game. Some of the Tony Hawks, in order to master them, you need more than 40 hours. I'd argue.
Sure. I don't know. I think they're... They feel simplistic, regardless of the fact that they're not, especially in this post-skate game economy. the thing, it just like Skate completely changed what that genre is. You can't, I don't know, because it would feel very arcadey. Like, I think that's really where I'm coming from here. The Tony Hawk games, they feel like arcade games that have been lengthened out. They feel like Crazy Taxi, you know? They feel like it's something you play for a bit and you can then get into and get really, you know, get really good at it, but which doesn't necessarily retail as a full price product. And things which feel arcadey now, they go to marketplace, they go to mobile, that's where they live. I mean,
you know. I think my issue is more of it going to mobile. I'd be happy for it to be on a storefront and for a system that would allow me to play with a controller that doesn't involve heavy amounts of touchscreen use.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that I came into Tony Hawk's games, well, sort of like, because I only got to play one of the last, was it Pro Skater 4? I played a little bit of that, and then I played Thug. That was like the first Tony Hawk's game I put some serious time into, and of course that had a lot of story going in it, as did Thug 2.
I still find that absolutely bizarre, a skate game having story.
It worked really well. It was actually quite a compelling story, and for me, if they're going to resurrect the brand, I want them to go back to actually having a decent narrative. I mean, the only reason I didn't like American Wasteland that much was because they stopped having a customizable character for the main story. I was able to play as a girl in Thug and Thug 2. You had to play as a guy in American Wasteland.
A girl skateboarding? No.
Skateboarding is not a crime unless...
I've just popped out my monocle and spot my tea. it's like, you know, with you saying about, you know, because I just wanted to get this in because it's something that's bothered me for years. I had a mate at school, way back in the Victorian era, who was, you know, big into all this skateboarding. And several times he tried to get me to watch these excellent films that he'd bought. And they were American, and they were skateboarding films. Has anyone ever seen 1980s American skateboarding films?
No, I haven't, but they sound amazing. No.
They are bizarre. There was one I remember specifically where he said it was absolutely brilliant, and he had this joyous expression on his face while he was watching it, and I just, you know, almost like something you'd see in Peep Show, where I just turned to him, and I said, he must be taking the piss with this. And he's like, oh, look at that, because it started off news-style broadcast, newsreader. The president's daughter has been kidnapped. Police have no idea about her whereabouts. Cut to some radical dudes doing half pipes and skating along railings. And that's how they rescued the president's daughter, by skating.
Oh, that sounds so good. I want to recommend that actually to Lydia. She's doing a module at the moment on exploitation film, and that sounds like exactly the kind of thing that she would...
Exploitation.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, you know, it's exactly the kind of shit that you eat up, because it's shit that made, I guess, on like a really small budget.
Oh, yeah. I just found it absolutely bizarre.
Yeah.
It broke my head, and I remember it, this many years later, where it was just... The president's daughter has been kidnapped, so you lot go skating.
That's great. That sounds amazing. I want to watch that. I want to find out what that was and watch it like 6 times. I mean, it sounds terrible. It sounds terrible, but it sounds terrible in exactly the kind of way that I want to watch it.
I would rather not watch skateboarding films. I'd rather watch either documentaries or just loads of footage of people that have managed to grab sort of stuff from like a GoPro or something doing crazy things, and maybe Bale's can't beat a good Bale video.
Well, like that's basically
Christian Bale or Hey Bale or
Hey. That's basically
Bale being really angry at a Hey Bale.
I mean, in terms, sorry for doing this, but slightly going back to the kind of amount of content in a game. I do know that like Crazy Taxi, although it was quite fun and it was. To a certain extent, a bit of a learning curve for me. I did find that the city got way too small, way too quickly. But yeah. I did remember Tony Hawk's, you know, being a bit more content worthy.
Yeah. Like, I don't want anyone to think what I'm doing here is sitting here and being like, oh, you know, there wasn't enough in it, or there wasn't, like, I think, like, content, I'm being disingenuous. It's that arcadey feel, which I just don't think you can sell as a full price product anymore, at least not from a major studio.
Meanwhile, the statement from Activision that the gameplay is all about tricks using swipe maneuvers on the screen, has me worried, and this is what I was talking about, you know, I would rather it was at least on, you know, Xbox Live or PSN or something, rather than a mobile phone.
The way they're going, it may still turn up because that Deus Ex iOS and Android game.
True, yeah, that's coming.
Yeah, it's coming to at least Steam. So I reckon it's probably not far off from, you know, turning up an XBLA and, you know, PSN.
I think that that.
I was just about to say, it's actually quite bizarre what games that were on, you know, kind of mobiles and like handhelds are actually slowly coming towards consoles. Because I know Resident Evil Revelations was originally 3DS, now it's coming to console, and I do believe another one.
Oh, there was Arkham Blackgate.
Oh, yeah, Arkham City Blackgate.
Arkham Origins
Blackgate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have an irrational hatred of that game. I don't care if it's good or not. Because when I got a Vita, you know, looking, you know, through all these lists of games where it was, well, that's, you know, either a side port or it's an analog, you know, sort of, you know, semi-sequel. You know, it's a portable version of... you know, these, you know, its big console cousins. So, you know, I would have loved the idea of, you know, an Arkham game on Vita. And it was, you know, 2.5D side scrolling, blah, blah, blah. And so, GTFO.
I think that Activision.
I want a propo game.
I think that Activision quote about it being all about tricks and swipe maneuvers is actually the thing that has me the most worried, because that makes it sound like Tony Hawk Ride, but without the board.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How that game was basically on rails in a lot of ways. Not completely. You could still sort of ride around freely, but for a limited definition of free. And I don't know. But a big part of...
There is one Tony Hawk's game I think a lot of people overlook. It's a little gem on the Wii. Downhill Jam is so much fun.
Uh-huh.
If you ever see a copy of that going, it's worth having a go at.
It's four-player for a start, four-player.
I preferred Fell Walking Marmalade.
Sorry?
Fell Walking Marmalade. It's better than Downhill Jam.
Oh.
Uphill Preserve.
Oh. Well,
It took me longer than anyone else to get that, and I think I groaned harder. So congratulations.
Crossroad, no added sugar.
I want to say, I can't remember the name of it, but if we're talking about skating games, which I want to believe we still are, I want to erase that pun section. I want to just move past it. Does anyone remember that game, the skating game which came out, where you could sort of draw rails and pipes in the environment and skate over things to change them from, like, dry, like, stuffy, boring landscapes into radical skater town?
I remember hearing about it before it was launched, but...
That's not Jet Set Radio.
No, it's not.
No, it wasn't.
No,
it was much
more recent. That's a skating game I like.
It was much more recent than that. I think that was the last skating game, apart from the skate series themselves, which I was sort of excited about before it came out. Apparently it wasn't particularly good, and the thing I really remember about it is it was all about, like, you would skate over a billboard and it would change from, you know, boring thing into exciting skater thing. But because it was a skating game, it was loaded down with product placement. So there was one where you'd go into a building and it would have a big sign saying "don't chew gum," and then you'd skate over it and it would come up with a radical gum advert for an actual chewing gum company. Fighting the man.
I remember that coming out.
I remember it.
My brain keeps saying Dave Mirra, but no, he's a BMX bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called, but that was that looked interesting to me.
Pump It Up or something like that.
It was something radical.
Yeah, where it was like gnarly half pipe.
I could find it because I remember Giant Bomb did a quick look of it and it was fairly funny. So
I'm going to move on to the next bit. It's something that happens every couple of months.
I will just say, be thankful that it's still Activision doing it and it hasn't been picked up by EA, because then it would be riddled with free-to-play shite.
Roger Week still could be. It's going to mobile. But think about that.
I know it's Activision, and Activision are generally evil.
I think like an EA executive just sort of felt a tingle down their spine, and like having that idea is now in the ether, and they're like, oh, we can do this.
So, what have you done, Retroid? What have you done?
If you can think of a way to make money, then EA will find it.
60 cents to be radical.
Wait, that's almost like an alternative to Rule 34.
Yeah. Yep.
Except less sexy?
Yeah, and more capitalist.
Yeah.
oh, dear God.
Okay, so Dread sequel. Carl Urban was talking at a Star Trek press conference thing, but he talked about Dread for a bit, which is great, because that means we get to talk about Dread.
Yay.
Just in case you're wondering about the Star Trek news front, it doesn't look like Enterprise is coming back anytime soon, in case you're wondering. That was one thing to come out of press conference, as in the TV series.
What was that, a risk, or was that?
I didn't think she was talking about the idea.
With that music.
If it doesn't, yeah, if it could come back with that theme tune, that would be great. But no, apparently it's unlikely to come back at the moment, because there's been a lot of fan call out for that. Meanwhile,
not from me there, isn't.
Carl Urban says he's been in talks about a Dread sequel, and that there have generally been talks about it because the studio has taken notice about how well the home release has gone. You know, for like the DVD.
Because they didn't screw that up.
Yeah, there was a suggestion from Urban that the cinematic release might have been poorly handled.
Yep.
Might have been, I like that.
Yeah.
You're very diplomatic.
Yeah, there's... I think considering, you know, the amount of beautifully choreographed hyperviolence that was in the film and how badly it did in the US, it probably was, you know, quite clearly poorly marketed, you know.
Well, yeah. Weren't some of the posters and things pretty much just blank with the name on?
Yeah, I do remember something about that, which is, you know, kind of bad form when you think about the fact that American covers for things tend to need to be sort of quite literal.
Yeah, and I don't think Dread, I mean, everyone knows Judge Dread, but I don't think for most people, like, just the name, oh, Judge Dread, they're going to be like, oh, I want to go and see that Judge Dread film. Like, I don't think that sells it by itself, you know?
It wasn't even called Judge Dread, it was just Dread 3D.
Yeah.
Which, it's like, I'm a massive Judge Dread fan. Mm-hmm. I even didn't completely hate the Sylvester Stallone film. Wow. Even though it has me screaming at the screen at several points, and I hated the fact that they pretty much, oh, no, it's fine. We're completely justifying a fascist dictatorship future.
Yeah.
It's fine. There are, you know, it's good reasons. And, you know, all of that. And just, you know, the blank and, you know, just the name Dread 3D, it was kind of putting me off.
Mm. But it kind of, we know, you know, Dredd, that means, no, that's, you know, Judge Dredd. But, like, if you don't necessarily recognize that, that could be just, like, a horror film. That could be anything. That could be, like, anything. It's ridiculous.
Referring back to the US market again, it's only in recent years that the comics have started being made available in trade paperbacks. Like, only literally in the last couple of years. I don't know
Which is mad, because they had those, separate reprint magazine, didn't they? As in, you know, not like, you know, the magazine, but as in, you know, a Judge Dredd comic standalone that, you know, was reprinting stuff. Mm. Which I always thought was a bit mad.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I suppose the only reason it kind of happened when it did, like I said, it's happened the last couple of years is because Rebellion's got 2000 AD these days, and they've been trying to get on top of, you know, like the elements, media elements and printing elements of the 2000 AD universe. But I think it's the fact that I haven't heard a single American say something nice about Dredd, and I'm not sure if it's A, because they didn't watch it, B, because they didn't understand it, or C, kind of a mix of both. It just
I haven't
it was I think it was more
pop- bad.
I think it was definitely more popular over here.
Definitely.
Well, there are a mixture of reasons for that.
Yeah,
I mean,
including home turf.
Home turf, and I think for all its Americanness, it is a very British series. It's far more knowing, it's British perspective.
It's British American, you know. Yeah. It's British taking the piss out of America in a lot of ways. So you know.
Yeah, I do feel like though it's been the Brits trying to tell the Americans again that a film's good. You know, kind of like what happened with Donnie Darko. It's like did badly in the States, came here, we're like, oh, this is actually quite good, and the Americans are like, it is. What?
Yeah.
See, I know,
exact
like
reaction.
You can't judge everything based on this, but I know Reddit loves Dread, which is, you know, for all my absolute criticism of Reddit, then that's a good choice, you know. Like when it came out on DVD, there was a big thing on Netflix or whatever, there was a big thing on the front page being like, hey, go and get it so they can get a goddamn sequel going because this film's rad. Go and watch it. Go buy a Blu-ray.
And now it's on something on Netflix and pretty much everyone's got Netflix that wants, you know, to just watch stuff streaming. Just go watch it.
Exactly.
It doesn't cost them anything more.
And now, of course, it will do much. You know, I think actually that they've missed their window because really what I wanted was for Dread and The Raid to be permanently lined up side by side so that they're just sort of making the same film side by side forever but in these completely disparate contexts. I'd be super stoked if they just did that. That'd be great.
I've yet to see The Raid.
Oh, it's really good.
I know it's supposed to be, and it's on my Netflix list. It's pinned right there.
I need to do a shameless plug at this point, in which it's not at all shameless, and that is that if you, dear listeners, haven't listened to episode 62 of this podcast, go and find it and listen to it on the website, because we have an interview with Dread's composer in that episode.
Indeed, we do.
Paul Leonard Morgan is awesome.
And it is an awesome soundtrack.
It is a very awesome soundtrack.
It is a very good film in pretty much every regard.
I'm gonna move on to our last bit of news for the week.
It was Zsa Zsa's. Had to.
Last bit of news, people news. The thing with the Nintendo Wi-Fi service thing.
Oh, silly Nintendo.
There's conflicting points of view about this. Yes. There was an opinion piece over on Hex, which partially details these conflicting points of view.
Who would have predicted we wouldn't agree on this?
For those of you who are unaware, the online services for Nintendo games, and that's like, is it first and second party or just first party?
Well, technically, Pokemon is Game Freak, so technically,
second
I think
party,
Pokemon
yeah.
is second party.
So
I think it is.
So basically, certainly first party games and second party games by the end of May. Near the beginning of May.
20th of May.
Is it 20th of May? They will have their online services essentially gone.
That's the point. I mean, Nintendo games, not exactly highly renowned for their online services.
Mind you, I mean, something like Mario Kart, that is still
pretty
popular.
Yes, Mario Kart is the one
it's still very busy. The Eurogamer Mario Kart thread is a terrifying thing to wander into.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It is one of the biggest threads on the entire forum.
Wow.
And it's just people talking about shooting bananas at each other. And that bastard blue shell, of course.
Okay.
but
yeah, obviously Mario Kart 8 is going to be out 10 days later in the UK.
That's like 10 days of no online Mario Kart after getting so used to it.
Oh no, how will we survive? I mean, we haven't played it for, you know, years already. I mean, how are we going to
get it
for 10 days?
There was a games night before Christmas where it
was
cracked open, and I do believe online has been instigated in at least the past 6 months at one point or other.
I'm not 100% sure. I remember playing Mario Kart, you know, with people in the room, but I don't remember it going online.
No, I think there was online happening. This is a false memory.
I think it is false memory.
It's not.
I shall take you to court.
It's a false memory. That's just me.
Objection.
But it's not just stuff, but, I mean, Super Smash Bros. Brawl obviously will be affected, though.
Well, to be... come on! I mean... It was broken before it came out, come on!
I think most of the Super Smash Bros. Brawl players, if you just had random input assigned to the characters, they wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's
I think I'm going to go on Shoryuken, and maybe you should go and post that in a thread on Shoryuken and just leave. Just walk away.
Yeah, confrontations. I just said, oh, come on, if you want to have a fight, just button mash at me.
Just go into their Super Smash Brothers thread and be like, but isn't this a game for babies? And walk away. Just let it happen.
God, no.
But, I mean, the thing is with Brawl is that I remember going on it, like, near launch online, and even then it took me, like, 10 minutes at minimum to find a match with somebody, and even then there was only one player in that match.
Oh, that's always
good. The matchmaking system was not good at all.
And I'm pretty sure they bailed on you.
It's very possible.
I'm pretty... Even though you weren't, like, pawning them to beyond reasonable existence, they bailed on you. It wasn't. It didn't
it's
even look like
it's owning.
Dare.
But
pawning is something different.
Oh, for pity's sake. But there are perhaps some people who might suggest that the closure of certain Nintendo Wi-Fi service, or in fact the entire Nintendo Wi-Fi service, is also an attempt to perhaps persuade people to upgrade systems so they can purchase newer games that do still have online.
Good luck with that.
It's possible, but by the same
the
token,
cynical people.
Oh, that,
this isn't looking at what is still actually available, which is obviously the e-shops and the internet service and stuff like YouTube and Netflix. They're
bearing in mind that the was it the Wii Slim or the stupid shitty cut down? Why did you bother with that?
Is it Wii Mini?
Whatever it is, the shitty version of the Wii doesn't have Wi-Fi access, and it doesn't have even if you plug stuff in to try and use Ethernet with it, like you could with the original one, you could get the the USB adapter. It specifically goes out of its way to not support that at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
Quick, turn that off. We could make money from it. Stop it now. But yeah, go and read the, I think it's the, could be Digital Foundry overview of the, the black and red Wii Mini on Eurogamer. And it's, I cannot see any possible reason why anyone would want that machine if they knew anything about the format.
Color coding.
Yeah, I like red and black. No way is that going anywhere near.
Wasn't there like a 25th anniversary Mario edition that was red Wii?
Oh no, that's an actual Wii. As in, this was the it was originally because cut price only supposed to be in Canada or something for some reason.
Yeah.
And it made it over here, and it's bloody awful.
Was that released in the year of Luigi? Because I don't think he'd stand for that, personally.
I think he'd flush that down a pipe.
Yeah, I figured he would.
Which is probably why Mario keeps getting called out on all those jobs, because it's a wee bloody minis that are flushed. But yeah, now, my angle on all this is it probably is because they're trying to push people towards buying their new stuff. And I'm not even going to comment on how that's going. But to my mind, why don't they keep selling these games? Either, if they don't want to do it physically, sell Wii games on, the eStore, because they're backwards compatible, they would work on Wii U, a lot of people would really like these things, and, they could still make some money off them, flog them, at tenner. Something like that. I can't see, because... is the Wii still being sold? I still see it around.
I believe so.
Yeah, so why are they turning these things off when they're first party, for all intents and purposes when it comes to Pokemon? Pokemon is not going to come out on anything else. Mm. So it, you know, it's Nintendo properties. You've got a possibility of still making some money off these things. So why turn them off? I don't quite get it.
But by the same token, they could basically, because it's the connection itself that's being turned off, technically, if they actually kind of just basically stuck in, you know, the like an alternate thing, they can recreate the, say, for example, the online play for Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very possible for them to basically turn off the Wi-Fi connection, stick in a new, you know, new system for it, and bam, away you go. So it's still possible for them to do that.
I've just realised. I mean, I know they. I remember looking at the list of stuff that's affected by the closure last week, and I know Animal Crossing City Folk got mentioned, but I assume because they're saying DS as well, one assumes that the online for Animal Crossing Wild World would also be affected, and that's probably one of the few games where I successfully sort of went online and actually, you know, went to other people's. Yeah, interact with other people in a game before a certain point in my sort of gaming. Yeah.
Which one was Wild World?
DS.
Regular DS version.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that one was mentioned.
That's a long end of nostalgia, sort of, for me. It's all going to be gone.
I just don't see why. It's a bit like someone's upgrading from DVD to Blu-ray. So their reaction is, I'm just going to throw away all my DVDs.
Well, to be fair...
And it's like, well, you could be selling them cheap. Why?
From Nintendo's perspective, if you think about it, because they're obviously still got, you know, an inherent cost in running the service.
So, which again, I find a bit mystifying because, you know, if we go back to the original Xbox, that you know, the way it did its, you know, its multiplayer, they didn't have servers, they were peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit mystified that Nintendo didn't do it that way anyway, in which case they wouldn't have servers and the games could work in perpetuity. Yeah, that one. Forever. So I'm a bit mystified why they did it that way anyway, so they can have servers that they could switch off. I mean, and I know we're not talking about Nintendo's own Call of Duty. Which I can't even imagine what would happen if, you know, Activision switched off the servers for that.
Hell, you know, desolation.
Before a new one was released, yeah, there would be. I think there would be a lot of destroyed basements.
I think actually, some degree of hell on earth could happen. There's a big player base.
I've been in a queue with Call of Duty fans, and that it was kind of a bit of a hell on earth situation. Especially when it was the first morning of, you know, the most recent Eurogamer Expo, and Activision were giving a first come first served free copy of the new Call of Duty game.
Oh, that's insane.
It was it's like, please don't do this. Oh, they've done it. Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
I mean, I presume there's reasons why they went for servers rather than peer to peer.
I don't know, but it just seems, you know, if you're wanting to avoid costs, then I would have thought peer to peer would have been the way to go. But
I think I had a comment from somebody on Twitter last week when I sort of tweeted the link to all this, kind of going that their son was going to be really upset about this because he was still playing a bunch of the Pokemon games online.
Yeah.
DS ones. So there are, I mean, yes, you've got, you know, the 3DS and it now has at least one generation of sort of proper Pokemon games to it.
But.
Yeah.
In the end, you're always going to have people that are kind of, you know, the odd one or two that are playing, you know, admittedly, Pokemon is far more prevalent than, say, for example, because I remember there was Resident Evil Outbreak that was meant to be playable online.
Mm.
Nobody complained when they, you know, took those offline.
Did we manage to go online with that once, or did we just play it offline on the
console? No, I think we played it offline.
Yeah.
just to me, it kind of goes in the face of the Nintendo are your gaming friends kind of thing, because some of these games, I mean, I'm not even thinking of the more immediately multiplayer orientated, like stuff like the Mario Kart online modes. Mm. You know, if we ignore that, the social multiplayer, which Nintendo have done, pretty well. Things like the Animal Crossings, the Pokemon, things like that. I find it doesn't quite chime with the way they present themselves. As you can play these with your friends, even if your friends aren't physically around. In close proximity, you can play these, unless we decide that we've got a more up-to-date version, so screw you.
Well, it's not as though they've only just bought out the new version of Animal Crossing.
Well, no, it's not, but why... if there's not that many people playing them, surely the servers can't cost that much to run. It smacks of they're trying to push people towards the new releases. And that makes more sense, really, with the 3DS, because the 3DS has, done quite well. It's not, there was that stumble when it first came out.
Yeah.
But to my mind, they've rectified it. The 3DS is now, there. It's like my nephew is, coming up to 7. He and all his friends have got 3DSs. Mm. So, I can understand it with that, but it just strikes me as if there are people who are enjoying your games, then try and sell things to them. Try and support them. That's your community. Just, cutting off all these people who are playing, these games. It's like, I seriously trying to tell me that no one's wanting to go back to one of the earlier Pokemon games and, play them online.
Well, maybe they do, but maybe there's, not as many people to play online.
Also, with those, I still think they should be flogging them on their e-stores.
They still can actually do that. They can. They can implement, whatever kind of system that the 3DS and the Wii U are on now. They can put that functionality in, I'm pretty sure.
I still think it would probably cost less to keep a few servers running, or even just a server running, than to retrofit some of their old releases.
I'm gonna move us on now. to our final discussion.
Yeah, because neither of us are gonna change our minds.
Day.
That's because I'm right.
Okay, so we said earlier that we were gonna talk about plot devices. Plot devices. Sorry, that don't quite work when you think about them. It's those MacGuffins that a whole huge chunk of the film's plot kind of hinges on, and oh my god, I've spent a week thinking about a thing after seeing or reading or playing the thing, and I'm like, it doesn't hold up. It doesn't hold up at all. Anybody want to go with first? I just want to say right now that there are likely to be spoilers, and we will try to say what gets spoiled.
I think the one that instantly springs to mind, I'm not entirely sure whether it's necessarily a MacGuffin per se, but massive plot hole of, Alien versus Predator Requiem, where,
I don't think that could even count. As a film, it was a...
that film was a plot hole in reality.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
But yeah, I mean,
God, that would be a great insult for someone. You're just a plot hole in reality. That's what you are. Get out of my face.
You're not going to make the cut. You're going to get edited out.
But, I mean, at the beginning, they decide instead of nuking the place, oh, let's go down and hunt the aliens and whatnot. Yeah, okay, so what happens? Oh, yeah, it's got too out of control. Let's nuke the place anyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Well, why didn't you do that in the first place? You obviously don't care about humans.
I was going to say that there's one that's shouting in my head right now, but I'll keep quiet if you go on.
Oh, is it all I had?
All I had, and this is like because I just saw the list of things we were going to talk about today just before we started the show. Earlier today, I was rewatching The Departed for no reason.
Oh yeah,
I think someone posted a GIF of it, and Okay, so obviously I'm about to spoil this. The bit where Martin Sheen's character gets thrown off the roof.
Yes.
Why don't they just arrest everybody? Like, just like when they have killed a like lead cop and a bunch of cops have witnessed it happen, can't they arrest everybody at that point and just not give an F? Like, that seems like the obvious next step. Just start arresting everybody. I recognize the whole film is basically about these two, you know, like the cops and the criminals, and both of them are sort of, you know, equivalent morally. They're both total incompetent jerks and all of that. And that's sort of the film. But I don't feel like it's a hugely metaphorical film. I feel like at that point in the film, can't you just...
Are we saying that could they have not pulled a RICO against... everyone, which is what they do in The Dark Knight when they round up all the criminal gangs, gangsters.
Exactly. I mean, they can prove that everyone was on the phone and they were talking to each other and they planned to go to this building and then they threw a cop off the roof. Like, that seems like the point where you just go and arrest everyone. But instead it just cuts to he's dead and then all the cops are in a boardroom arguing, but just about how did he get killed, not like... should we go and arrest the people who killed this guy? Should we go and do something? They're just yelling at each other. It's like, come on, just go and arrest them. That's it. That's game over. That's done.
It was a therapy session.
Sorry?
It was a therapy session. That's why they're shouting.
Ah, okay.
Crime was screaming.
Just in there screaming and punching each other.
Yeah, to make up for the fact that they didn't just arrest them.
Having recently rewatched The Departed as well, you do raise a fair point.
Yeah.
The only thing, and this is the problem with Footholes, is having to come up with the logic as to why things aren't the certain way.
Yeah.
But I suppose the reason being that perhaps they were all too bloody scared.
Yeah.
That they'd miss someone and then they'd have someone come for them.
Exactly. They're worried about that, and I guess sort of the way they always hand wave that in other movies is they're like, no, we're going for the big guy, but he wasn't there, so we can't get him yet. But, like, that's not how police work. What they do is they get someone small, they flip them on someone bigger, and then they flip them on someone bigger and bigger until they've got, like, the tiniest bit of dirt or tax evasion on the big bad, and then they put them away for 100 years because, like, whatever. That's what that's about.
Well,
that's how that works.
Americans do seem to have better punishments. Well, I say better. They seem to have harsher punishments for dealing with financial crime than we perhaps do. So,
well, we do slap on the wrist a little bit for fine.
Yeah, they tend to. They do actually tend to be better at like getting people who've done fraud and stuff like behind bars. I mean, the Enron guys.
Yeah.
For instance, mind you, I think one of them has walked in the past year because of some reason or other. Anyway, cut.
Because those guys can afford lawyers.
Yeah.
I am thinking that explains why the US and UK have so many of the people from Goldman Sachs and. well, not HSBC, you know, Royal Bank of Scotland and such behind bars.
Yeah, you know, our prisons are actually too full of bankers, you know. Sometimes I think, you know, it's just loading down our prison system.
You know, having to do financial services for pennies.
Mm. Yeah.
can I talk about my MacGuffin-y plot device-y issue?
Please do.
The microwave device in Batman Begins. Okay.
They just wanted a hot sandwich.
Oh, obviously, again, spoilers, but, you know, I'd hope this wouldn't be too revelatory for people. But the whole thing is, oh, it evaporates all the water in the vicinity. Okay, sure, fine. And it seems to be, when you look at it and watch the thing, it seems to be incredibly effective at what it does, you know.
It's super effective.
It's super, super effective. And that left me wondering, you know what else has got moisture in it, other than people? You know? And things like buildings have an incredible amount of moisture in them, in terms of, you know, even in the mortar and bits of wood and stuff, and,
you know, it has moisture in everything.
Yeah, everything has moisture in it. So really, everyone should have either, you know, exploded or crumbled to dust or something as the device whipped through the streets of Gotham.
Which would be like, that would be a super weapon. Not like the weird, let's make everyone have, like, really bad nightmares kind of thing. Just disintegrate everybody.
Yeah.
Like, that's a super villain.
Yeah.
I am getting flashbacks to that Star Trek episode with the ugly bags of mostly water. Except you're fine if there's a massive microwave emitter machine, because for some reason it won't do anything.
I feel like at the point, it like if I understand why often in films where you can suspend your belief to a point, then something like that tips you over the edge. But also, it's the goddamn Batman. So I sort of find myself at a point being like, oh, but there's also a guy who wears a scarecrow mask and blasts people with nightmare fuel. So...
Nightmare fuel.
I recently rewatched a bit of Batman the Animated Series, including the episode where Scarecrow's introduced. His character makes perfect sense. It's fine. It's fine. But
he's got some science chemicals that make people have a bad time.
Yeah.
You blinded your brain with science.
and then made it pee itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Just because I can't get away from Batman for the moment, the Dark Knight Rises.
Right, no one could get away from Batman. That's his whole thing.
Dang right, baby.
What was that? That was Batman played by Bruce Campbell for a second there. Which I would watch the hell out of, to be clear.
Give me some sugar, baby.
if they ever did the Dark Knight... Is it the Dark Knight Returns, the comic, then you'd have Bruce Campbell being Bruce Wayne then, because that would make perfect sense, because he's really old in that comic. But
you're trying to say that Bruce Campbell's really old.
It's getting on a bit now, but he's not really old.
Yeah. But no, the Dark Knight Rises, my plot device MacGuffin-y thing, is the whole, it's put about earlier in the film that they can flood the chamber, with the reliable yet weaponizable, energy source in MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And considering Lucius's concern about the public interest, as put forth in the second film, what I've never been able to handle, this was immediately after the film and reinforced by how it should have ended. Why the hell, spoilers and stuff, did Lucius just not flood the chamber before what is basically a nuke was taken out of the chamber? Or he was right by the controls. They were right there. All he had to do was just, whack a button and bam.
And
no,
like, it didn't
film.
It didn't seem like, apart from it being like quite well hidden, it didn't seem like there was any security. It wasn't like he had to... break a surely you would put just like a bunch of stuff on there that if anyone who isn't Bruce Wayne or his buddies goes in, then it just floods the chamber automatically. Surely you just do that. Like, it seems like it was just you go in and you press the right button, go down in the lift, and then you chill.
Are you suggesting they should have countermeasures?
I feel that the film did not take enterprise security seriously enough.
Like, you make something that elaborate, you want to make it so it actually triggers. You don't just, that doesn't seem like something that should be manually triggered to me. I mean...
I suppose if you could have something that's like a... because obviously the thing gives off radiation, so a couple of sensors around the place, and, if one of them senses less radiation or more or something, it's like, bam. Unless, of course, a countermeasure to the countermeasure's been put in place to stop it from doing that. But in theory, the bad guys, hopefully, because you've got enterprise security... actually there.
With Lieutenant Worf in charge.
Yeah. So hopefully that wouldn't, basically bad things shouldn't have happened the way that they did.
Another thought, since you just brought up the fact that it has radiation in it. Okay, now I don't know anything about radiation. I'm going to correct me if I'm wrong.
It's bad, you know that much.
Yeah, I got that. Like, if you flood the river into a chamber full of radiation, then presumably that water doesn't just sit there. It continues to be in the river. So did they just irradiate the river? If they activated, would it just irradiate the river?
I would hope it would be one way.
It depends if the water flows out afterwards. But it's the whole thing with what happened with Fukushima, that the cooling tanks, which were obviously originally sort of water from the area, did unfortunately leak into the surrounding sea and stuff. And nuclear power is an annoying thing, and in theory, normally when things are in a coastal area and they take in water to cool, the process and everything, it doesn't actually come directly into contact with the nuclear materials.
Okay, good. I just that was just a thought there. So.
Unfortunately, I think one of the things that happened with Chernobyl is that they did mix like the coolant with obviously the material, the radioactive materials, which caused a whole lot of problems because you had stuff that was at incredibly stupid high temperatures suddenly be mixing with cold water, and I think crazy bad things happened in terms of, you know, like when you
I hear things didn't go great at Chernobyl.
Yeah, so. You know when you make something incredibly hot and then you try to rapidly cool it down, and how actually in most cases things tend to break when you do that.
Yeah.
Chernobyl was, like, I think, like, a very good example of... Oh, I say good. A very bad example of that happening.
Yeah, it's not the one I'm going to go to if I'm demonstrating that principle. Yeah.
Can I just say that, I mean, technically speaking, I think that in Iron Man, throughout all three films, obviously you have his arc reactor in the middle of his chest.
Yeah, which is a small version of this thing.
Because, I mean, in the third one, he finally decides to take out the pieces altogether. Yeah. So it couldn't have been that difficult. Why didn't he just do that at the beginning?
I think it was a case of waiting for medical technology to catch up. Like, so in the comics that the third film's based on, the Extremist story arc, it's made far more explicit that Tony was waiting for a time when the tech had caught up that it could be done. Like, the point is that the surgery can't be performed because the technology is not there, but it's not something that they make explicit enough in the film. Or perhaps they do with the Chinese version, which has several more minutes on the whole thing.
Although, by all accounts, I've heard that that extra scene is crap and the Chinese didn't like it.
But at the same time, maybe that's just due to stereotyping, but if it actually added to the plot and explaining, you know, through exposition what was going on.
I think it was a victim of being an extra scene for the Chinese version in that it couldn't be too important. So, I think that was the issue. Well, that was my interpretation.
Yeah, if they cut it, then all it would be stop us having this discussion right now. And, like, I doubt many people walked out the cinema thinking that.
Yeah,
They'd still paid by that point.
Back to Dark Knight Rises for a moment, though, because perhaps what's worse than the Gaffney with the why wasn't the chamber flooded to stop bad things from happening? How you fix a broken back? Broken backs. Yeah.
It got better.
You just, you know, like, all this modern science, techno nonsense, it's nothing compared to, like, hanging someone up with a rope for a while. I'll do it. You'll be fine.
He is the goddamn Batman.
Yeah.
He just growled at his spine.
Unlisted superpowers and the such, like, apparently. Kryptonian healing factor, perhaps, was involved.
Was it my imagination, or did they actually mention there was something like, you know, the nerves were trapped?
Yeah, like it wasn't actually broken. It was some weird thing that just made him have a bad time and have to get smacked in the back a bunch.
I think still with the whole rope thing, it was kind of stretching things a little too far.
He's the goddamn like Batman.
Anyway.
The one that, like, like, I saw someone do a big write-up on the that prison generally, and the reason why the idea that climbing out the pit is super difficult is ridiculous, because there's someone at the bottom holding the rope, which is strung up to the top of the pit, and then the other end comes back down and gets tied around the person who's running, right?
Right.
So unless the person at the bottom is, like, just, like, hates you, then there shouldn't be that big of a fall if you, like, drop, because surely they pull up any slack. So unless they just hate you and give you a ton of slack so you fall down and crash into the wall and stuff, then surely when you fall, all that happens is you sort of bounce harmlessly off the wall and you can just sort of swing across like that. It just, if the person at the bottom, and you know, the other side to that, I thought the whole point is there's not really any jailers down there, it's all just like criminals. Surely they could work together for like 5 minutes to get out, like, unless there's one person who is super possessive of the other end of the rope.
Super possessive.
Yeah, like,
it's my goddamn rope.
Yeah, super possessive of the other end of the rope, and also, like, a complete jerk. Like, That's the person. You just go and beat him up and then just leave. Like, take 5 minutes. It'd be cool.
Just get to the top and give a yank.
Exactly.
Why? Because I'm an arsehole.
Yeah.
I'm sure if anybody else got any plot voices that, you know.
I have a few.
Go on.
Well, there's my favourite one, which I mentioned before. Right. Which is Loki.
Oh,
lock him up, and that's, you've saved yourself 2 Thor films and an Avengers Assemble. Because it's, Loki's doing something naughty, which means there's an invasion of Earth. Right, well, stop him doing that. And then, Loki is doing something naughty by causing another bigger invasion of Earth in Avengers Assemble. And I've yet to see Thor 2, but I'm willing to bet it's something that stupid bastard's done. And I like the character, but Jesus Christ, it's just everything is down to Loki. Just stop him.
And in the second one, it's not actually Loki.
Are you sure? We've got it in the house. Loki, I haven't actually watched it yet because it's Thor.
But it isn't his fault.
Are you sure? You're not just making excuses there?
We're very sure in this particular instance, despite my mixed feelings towards that film.
Is he indirectly responsible? Is it is it something that he's done in the past which makes it happen?
No.
Blimey.
It's somebody else's mistake that's leading to it all going down.
Because that was part of the reason why I couldn't quite get on with Avengers Assemble on the first watch. Where it's just, it's Loki again!
For me,
you know, it's a bit like, maybe if you actually, you know, just locked him up and stopped him doing shit, then you wouldn't have to.
Yeah, if there was like a Batman-esque, like Joker-Batman relationship thing going on. But it seems like that guy's just a jerk, and they could just be like, quit it, dude. Go to prison.
You know what it reminded me of? And this is showing my age. The He-Man cartoon. Where it would be, He-Man would defeat Skeletor and he would be holding him over a lava pit or something like that. And then he'd say, no, because I am a good and pure man, I can't take the life of another person. So I'm not going to let you drop into the lava and I'm going to save you and let you go.
Meanwhile, Man of Steel completely decided to move away from this train of kind of doing these sorts of things and actually get on with the killing.
Hmm. I've yet to actually see that as well.
For me,
I should really get off my arse and watch all these films because their sequels are going to be coming out before.
The trouble is, oftentimes when things come out which do the whole just kill the bad guy and stop being jerks about it, then they have questionable morals in and of themselves. It's never like if it's. If the enemy is straight up Skeletor, then drop him in the lava. But it's always like
he had a skeleton and a hood for a face. It's like, come on, it's not hard. There's no grey area with Skeletor. It wasn't like, maybe I shouldn't do this. Nah, I'll do it anyway.
Instead, the ones which tend to like be 100% into just kill the bad guy are all like grim dark. Frank Miller-y stuff like 300 and stuff like that, where it turns out that the bad guy all along is like people who aren't white, like that's the moral of 300 basically.
Makes increasing amounts of sense when you see what happened to Frank Miller after 9/11.
I mean,
and it's like, right,
oh, he's a fascist, oh, okay, oh, I gotcha, right,
yeah,
right, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be going slightly off your stuff from.
Yeah, are they doing a sequel to that called 301? And I saw like a bus advert earlier.
Yeah, 301 Dalmatians or something.
Okay, I can't wait. I'll watch that.
Where someone wants to make a coat out of Spartans. I think that was it.
I've unfortunately seen the trailer for the 300 sequel more times than I care to. haven't read up on the Persian Empire in light of. Within the same week watching it was last year we ended up watching Prince of Persia Sands of Time, and rewatching Argo within the same week, and I was like, yeah, I want to read up on some history of Persia and Iran. And then sort of seeing the trailers now for the new 300 film, I'm like, oh, fuck you. This is ridiculous.
So, what did you think of Argo, by the way? Because I hated that film.
I thought from a technical perspective, it was actually really well done. It's one of the few films I've watched where, other than, I suppose, some of the women's dialogue where they're just kind of worrying about the men, it's one of the few films where they don't waste dialogue. Like, everything's got its place. So from that perspective, I really, really, really loved it. And it was one of my favourite films of the year because of it.
Oh, that's fair enough. That's the thing. I think it's a well-made thriller, and I can respect that. I just feel like if you wanted to make a well-made thriller, you probably shouldn't set it in such like a politically charged like thing like that. I feel like you should have just made a thriller. That would have been fine, instead of making this weird, like, it's weird that the five-minute cartoon segment that introduces the film is more balanced and like smart than the entire rest of the film in terms of, like, you know, a political exploration of that situation. Instead, you just made a thriller, which was like,
I should get to watching that, because I know you don't like it, but I'll see. I am right in thinking that the Persian Empire was entirely made out of cats. Yeah,
that's true. That is true. Can confirm.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We might have to talk about that. I like the Persian Empire.
And the Greeks were dog people, so it was just a whole thing, you know. And I don't mean like fans of dogs. I mean they were literally dog people. It was a mess back then.
I thought that was the bosses in Egypt.
that also.
Now, let's see. I'm thinking another MacGuffin. I'm just thinking here. Let's see. More or less the entire end hour of the Mass Effect 3.
I don't want to go into too much detail about that. But
no, I would just say it completely contradicts several massive conversations that you have in the other two games. And it's just, nope. Turns out there is an off switch. Which was bollocks. Anyway, there you go.
I never played them, so.
Well, they spend, you know, hours and hours, in dozens of hours, building up, you know, the big bad. I'm trying not to be spoilery with it, but it's pretty much excellent up until there, where they just say, yeah, we're bored now. We just want to stop.
I thought the same thing about the ending of Gone Home, where Luigi comes out and just vacuums the house of all the ghosts. It's just, you know, it didn't feel in keeping with the tone of the rest of the game to me, I think. So that was a problem.
Kind of jumped the shark. And then Hoover.
Yeah, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love me some Luigi. But just, you know, the ghosts were really building to something, so.
That's a
bunch of outdated jokes and references there, and I apologise.
It makes perfect sense to me, because I've been playing the GameCube version of Luigi's Mansion lately. Yeah. So
I've got one for games. Who's played The Last of Us?
Yes.
No.
Who's worried about spoilers for The Last of Us, even though we've already warned our listeners of spoilers?
Yeah, go on.
So yeah, so The Last of Us, having completed it at Christmas, the thing that really annoyed me with that was the Fireflies as a group and as a plot device for sort of driving along with Ellie the game forward, being complete utter idiots. Like,
how so?
Their expectation that by cutting her head open, they would find a cure, when clearly her brain structure had no real reason behind stopping the thing from spreading. It would have been an immune issue. And it would have been A, far simpler, even with their limited technology availability and cleanliness, having to do things like lumbar punctures, do a bone marrow sample, take lots of blood samples so that they could work up, you know, white blood cell thing counts and profiling and bloody. Basically, their entire technique was completely and utterly unrealistic.
Hold up. Are you saying that the idea of creating a vaccine by taking someone's brain out, sticking it in a blender and injecting it into everyone else's body is not a good idea? Because it's to me, that's my understanding of how vaccines work.
Meanwhile, we didn't even know if the poor girl was harbouring something like VCJD, so you wouldn't want to be transferring her pyrons to everyone left, right and centre anyway, because then everyone would get VCJD, you know, which is just a stupid idea. You know, you don't want everyone going around with not just some weird fungally infection thing, because it probably would still kill them because it wouldn't invoke really an immune response, but they could have got mad cow disease to boot, you know. I mean,
you said she had mad cow disease.
I'm saying that there's always a risk. You don't transfer prions between people. That's why nobody's started doing brain transplants yet. It's a risk.
Yummy nummy prions.
But it's,
I don't know what to add to that.
Well, actually, I could give a little bit more science kind of to that. The reason why there's, you know, Papua New Guinea and the whole cannibalism thing that has and or may still be happening or has happened in the last century or so there. There is evidence that due to said practices, it has caused various brain diseases amongst the populace, similar, you know, sort of dementia kind of BSC kind of like stuff, because of the fact that people ended up eating sort of contaminated bits of brain. So, you know, you don't just don't eat brains.
That's, yeah, I'll try not to, but you know, sometimes.
I mean, zombies are fine because you know they've you know they're already kind of, you know.
Yeah, zombies. I think mad cow disease is the last worry of zombies, to be honest.
Yeah, pretty much.
What are you gonna do? Start like forgetting things? That's not really a problem zombies have. So.
If you think about it, that'd be the best way of doing a zombie thing, basically, where, you know, somebody's been a cannibal for so long, they've got VCJD.
Or some other kind of prion disease.
Yeah, or some other kind of prion disease. Bites somebody else, which then transmits the disease.
Yeah, good work. Or, you know, we could talk about the MacGuffin in Warm Bodies, which, even though I love that film, it wasn't quite sure about whether or not it wanted to be a lovely zombie film with proper zombie film logic, or something with magical realism, or something with zombie film logic. Because what happens in Warm Bodies is it's a beautiful film in its own right, but I had issues with MacGuffins. They were MacGuffin-y.
I'm going to say the Saw films, which everything about those films doesn't make any goddamn sense, but that's sort of why I love them. I think the Saw films are, I'll make this case extensively if people give me time to, but please don't, because okay, it would just bore you all senseless. That the Saw films are, despite not being any good, some of the most important films if you want to understand the social conditions of the past 10 years.
Transformers. Like,
sorry?
Oh,
sorry.
Transformers. Okay.
Transformers, not
oh,
so
Jesus
much.
Christ.
Which Transformers one? All of them? Or
well, it's
which
just the fact
one?
That doesn't, what is it, Megatron get killed off in the first one?
Yes.
Dumped in the, you know, sea because, you know, he can obviously never come back.
just check him in the ocean. Be fine.
Yeah.
Well, apart from the, you know, the whole thing with, you know, as I said when we, you know, talked about them a while back, that you find a giant robot frozen in deep ice and therefore deactivated. So you take him to the middle of the desert and then spend a lot of energy making sure he's frozen, because nothing could ever happen to that freezer.
You know, it's a good thing that the International Seed Bank of Salavabad or whatever is not being run in that way. If they were following Transformers logic, we would not have a seed vault at all. It's just melty seeds.
Yes, so back to the awful, terrible, terrible crap Transformers films.
The thing is that they already established the first one that phosphorus rounds do damage to Transformers. So they could have quite easily melted down Megatron and melted him down and then, I don't know, sent him off planet in a shuttle or something. They could have got rid of him more effectively.
Even if they wouldn't have been able to, you know, melt him down because whatever reason, I don't know, maybe his metal's just, you know, that powerful, alien metal.
Metal.
Yes. They could at least melt metal inside him so that he couldn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he can't move about if he's, you know, literally block of metal.
Fill his body with body.
Exactly.
That yeah, sounds a bit sexy.
God.
I mean, bearing in mind that the Transformers films, I mean, apart from being overpoweringly crap in everything other than, look, we can make big robots fight, there's that whole, do they call it the Matrix? I don't even know anymore. The stupid magical shit that makes machines alive.
Yeah.
The spark.
The all spark.
Yeah, the old spark, where it's just, bloody awful.
How does it work?
I think the thing about the AllSpark is that, I mean, presumably this has been answered in some aspect of the fiction, which I'm not as well versed in my Transformers fiction as, you know, obviously I should be, apparently. but, like, at what point does something become insufficiently technical to... What does it transfer over from tool to machine? Like, where does it delineate? Is it anything with a microchip? Does it require a microchip in order to do it?
I'm not even sure of that, because there's that scene in the first one where the AllSpark is bringing all kinds of machines to life, including, someone carrying an Xbox 360.
Exactly, yeah.
And it starts coming alive with, you know, legs and blades coming out of it and things like that.
Mm.
And it's just, well...
Well, that's actually accurate. If you open up an Xbox 360, it's full of blades and guns. There's not even any like hardware in there. It's just blades and guns. I don't know how they work.
The launch versions were. That's why they caused themselves so much damage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just think about the AllSpark. Maybe... But again, this is the thing. This is what makes plot devices and MacGuffins so bad, if you're trying to think of ways to explain it. I always suspected that the AllSpark had some kind of nanites-type thing going on. And that basically they really like to latching onto things with certain levels of metal content.
What I want though, right?
Yeah. I think you're giving it far too much credit there.
I know.
Is that even with that logic, a device comes alive, their personality, their language is unique. Why? It's come from, you know, a singular, you know, kind of entity or nanite type thing. Surely every single personality that it's created should be identical.
What if, like, why wasn't there a scene where someone's pacemaker comes alive and just, like, bursts out their chest alien stuff?
I think it's because they were trying to still get that 12 rating, Martin. But,
like,
they wanted
somebody,
the 12 rating.
Somebody storyboarded that. Come on, someone has to have thought, wouldn't it be rad if we had, like, a chest burst to see? And someone was like, we can't do that. But, like, you know someone storyboarded that. I want to see that.
Did anybody hear about that 78-year-old guy who got... who was about to be embalmed, was actually alive in America earlier this week.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, this poor bloke, sort of 78 years old, got pronounced dead one day. He gets taken away body bag to a morgue. The morticians get ready to embalm him. And the guy's, you know, coming down to that, and he's like kicking and screaming inside the bag that he's been put in. And basically his pacemaker had temporarily failed when the doctor that saw him at the family home went to check his pulse before declaring him dead. So, yay, pacemakers.
That's why it's very important to keep your batteries charged.
Surely you should check, you know, kind of multiple times or something? I don't know.
Or locations.
Yeah, see, ah, can't be arsed, I've checked. They're close enough, yeah, it's dead. Don't care. Go on.
But, I mean, if you think about
I've got a sandwich waiting.
His brain to still be alive, it would have had to have kicked back in quite quickly.
Yeah.
Or been so irregular.
But the doctor didn't actually do it. He was just like, I checked.
Is it, yeah, that'll do. Yeah, can I go now? Yeah.
He looks dead. It's fine. I'm a real doctor.
Poking with a stick.
I think it's
that's a medical test.
I think it's at this point, due to my success with derailment, that I have to say that that is probably all we've got time for this week.
Works for me.
I didn't even get to mention Torchwood, the entirety of which is a MacGuffin.
That's okay, that there are other times that we can talk about Torchwood.
If they knew his name, if they're going to call their organisation an anagram of Doctor Who, they must already know his name is Doctor Who, which is his full name, legally, in the show. If you check it, his full name is Doctor Who, not the Doctor, as they keep trying to lie and tell you.
It's because they're too lazy to say the Who part.
Disrespectful, you know? I think it's really disrespectful to not call him by his full name.
Maybe because he's foreign and such, his name is actually, that's, Doctor is his surname.
Oh, right, okay. So we're calling him wrong and we should be calling him Who Doctor instead.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Who Doctor?
Oh, man. Oh, just... So it's goodbye from...
Martin Fulda of Ono Video Games. You should go to onovideogames.com and listen to my podcast if you enjoy hearing my terrible voice and bad opinions.
What can go wrong with that?
Agreed.
They're lovely opinions. I was catching up today.
Oh, thank you.
It's fine.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blair, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blair.
It's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also visit my blog at drowninginmultimedia.com. I want to say, or is it .co.uk? Just search Drowning
Try
in Multimedia.
Try one, then the other, if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But one of them is, like, really extreme pornography, though, so...
You have been warned.
.net or .org.
It's actually .xxx. It's really weird that you would choose that one.
It's going off to register that.
You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus Facebook and Google Plus as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to visit hexdimension.com.
And also, don't forget to breathe, Emily. Breathe.
Get hands of oxygen.
Good night.
Good night.
Peace.